With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public, free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom, and donate today. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.
Time for our health hacks. It's my pleasure to welcome back Dr. Glenn Davies of reversalnz.co.nz. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, Paul. How are you?
I'm very good. I hear you've been doing some heavy lifting.
Yeah. I've been the builder's labourer, the body's not quite as used to that sort of physical activity as it used to be.
Okay. So what, like lifting heavy things and moving stuff from there to here and to there?
Yeah, it's amazing how that type of activity keeps you really fit, I think.
Tradies must be the fittest people around then.
I would expect so, yeah.
Yeah, as opposed to some office dweller.
Yes, indeed.
At a government department somewhere.
Yeah, indeed.
Except for the parking people. Okay, so how to lose weight. Well, that's one way of losing weight. Do that every day.
Yeah, well, I think it's a really important topic because it's something that people struggle with, and medicine needs to put its hand up and say, hey, look, everyone, I'm really sorry, but we got this completely wrong, and we have to take some degree of responsibility for this. So on behalf of medicine, I'm putting my hand up saying, I'm sorry to virtually everyone. We got this completely wrong, but now we do know what to do.
Well, that's reassuring. So all those people who have struggled with diets and calorie counting and all that stuff over decades and decades, was that the right way to go?
Absolutely not. You know, that was called the calorie hypothesis, the idea being that if you eat less and move more, so basically, if you expend more energy than you take in, you're going to lose weight. And it's sort of, I think it's Newton's first law of thermodynamics, isn't it? And it absolutely should work. 100% it should work. It's just that it doesn't. And the reason that it doesn't is that there's some really complicated hormones and biochemistry that you've got to throw in there. And it's a dramatic oversimplification of quite a complex topic. And I'm completely tossing out the eat less, move more or the calorie hypothesis. And I think we need to replace it with the hormone hypothesis. It's a little bit more complicated to understand, but it does give people the solution, particularly people who have been struggling to lose weight for their whole life and have been doing what they've been told, who have been eating less and moving more, but not successfully losing weight, or if they do, not being able to keep it off.
So the body is not fundamentally designed just for an energy equation of energy in, energy out. There's a whole lot of other drivers there, and redundancy systems and anticipating environmental events, all these things that govern the way the body works, right? It's just not simple.
You're right. And when you think back to our genetics and how we used to live, it makes absolute perfect sense that it's not going to work.
Okay, first up, and I like this this title, and it comes under the heading of why we gain weight. Cavemen did not own refrigerators. Can you prove that?
I can't prove it, but I'm absolutely certain that not many cavemen owned refrigerators. In fact, it probably is true that not a single caveman owned a refrigerator, and that created for them a problem because the caveman then said, how do we store food to get through the harsh winter? And that really is the question that leads on to the solution. So how did the caveman store food which was likely to have been in more abundance at the end of summer to get through the harsh winter where there would have inevitably been a shortage of food? How do you do that without a refrigerator?
But you can find somewhere cold. If you're Neanderthal or living in the Northern Hemisphere, I guess you'd find frozen bits around because they'd be lying in snow drifts and things like that. But apart from that, it was all down to you, right? I mean, it was real time down to the individual.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we've only got to look at the bear for the answer to this question. So the bear in the end of summer would have come across a whole lot of apples and they would have scoffed down all those apples, put on weight deliberately gained weight, and then they can hibernate for a whole 6 months. Now, I know that they slow their metabolism during that time, but they were able to store enough fat in their subcutaneous fat stores to get through a whole 6 months of winter without eating. And they're pretty skinny and they're pretty hungry when they come out of their cave, but they've lived through a whole winter. The caveman would have had to reproduce that same sort of theory to make it through the harsh winter, and it's exactly what they did. And they had some help from their biochemistry. So I'm going to, you know, Paul and I are looking at a PowerPoint here, but there's a slide of some incredibly complex biochemistry going on in front of us. But basically the summary of it is that it's how the caveman and the bear turn glucose into fat. So this process, and it's really worth remembering this name, it's de novo lipogenesis. So novo means new, lipo means lipid or fat, and genesis to make, the making of new fat. And here's the key to this message: from excess blood glucose or from excess carbohydrate. So this is the caveman's refrigerator. This is how they stored the abundance of food as fat to make it through the winter. You know, and the thing is, we still maintain our caveman genetics. We still have the biochemistry which allows us to store excess carbohydrate or excess glucose as fat. We haven't changed our genetics. In fact, Paul, it takes 20,000 years for a population to change its genetics. And we haven't had, you know, we've that 20,000 years hasn't elapsed. So our caveman genetics is still there, but our modern food environment has changed dramatically.
So within the last 20,000 years, humans were still living in caves, in other words, and having that kind of way of living. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you think about how dramatically our environment has changed.
Yeah.
And especially in recent times. So, you know, if you think of a caveman family, they've lit a fire, they're sitting inside their cave, and they've probably got a rabbit, for example, on a stick. They're going to rotisserie it, and they're going to share that rabbit among the four of them. You know, that it's not a four-course dinner with dessert.
Much, actually, is it, really?
It's not much, but if you think of the components of that food, it's protein and fat and very, very little carbohydrate. And I always think back to pre-European Maori, and that's only having to go back 200 to 300 years to think about what pre-European Maori were eating. And it was kai moana, so it was seafood, it was birds, and it was a small amount of above-ground vegetables, the puha, the watercress, and there was some carbohydrate, that was the kumara, but it was a ceremonial food. It was stored and it was cherished as a ceremonial food. So largely they were eating protein and fats. And if you compare that to what we're eating now, it's ultra-processed food and it's predominantly carbohydrate. Our food environment has changed so dramatically, but our genetics haven't. And that's where the problem lies.
You just reminded me, before talking about bears, I saw a video recently of a bear coming out of hibernation.
Yes.
And it was like he sort of broke the snow-covered front of his den and came out like, what the hell, where am I?
You know?
He got his bearings. Maori must have been very healthy then. So I wonder what their lifespans would have been. I mean, obviously, you know, you can have accidents and there wasn't emergency medical care like there is today, all those things. But with those diets, you would expect if you could avoid accidents and things going wrong, probably a reasonably long life, wouldn't you say?
That's a really interesting point, and I'm afraid I don't know that. But what we do know is that when observations were made of pre-European Māori or Māori who were living in traditional ways, they were incredibly healthy. They didn't have tooth decay.
Wow.
They were strong and tall and lean and muscular, you know, and that's the observations which were made by Weston A. Price. So he was a dentist who went to many places around the world, looked at people living in traditional ways and compared their dentition with people who were living, eating European foods. And he also made observations of their general appearance as well as their teeth. But the observations were there was no or very limited tooth decay, and people were lean and strong when they were eating a traditional diet. As soon as they moved to flour and sugar, which were introduced in the European diet, there was immediately a change to being overweight, a loss of strength, and a loss of normal dentition. You know, so we know that that was the case. And that makes sense when you think we've still got caveman genetics.
Yeah. Okay, you started out by talking or mentioning the hormone model and how it's a little bit more complicated. Do you want to get into that now?
Yeah. Well, just let's just quickly dismiss the calorie model. You know, it basically says if you eat less and you move more, you're going to lose weight. And anybody that's ever tried a diet knows that that just doesn't work. So let's dismiss the calorie model and let's move and have a look at the hormone model of overweight. And the key hormone is insulin. And we've spoken a number of times about insulin, hyperinsulinemia, which means too much insulin, and then insulin resistance. That is the reason that we are overweight in modern society. So how it works is that insulin senses the amount of glucose in the blood. So glucose comes from eating sugar, but it also comes from eating carbohydrates, because when carbohydrates are digested, they become blood sugar. Insulin senses that there's a lot of blood sugar around, and that tells the body that we're into fat storage mode. When there's a lot of glucose in the blood, insulin tells the body to store fat. And let's think back to our caveman genetics. This was the end of summer. There's lots of fruit on the trees. We are deliberately trying to store fat. So it makes sense. So if I explain that clearly, that the hormones are sensing the abundance of food and saying we are at the end of summer, we have to store fat so that we can make it through the harsh winter. Insulin is the fat controller. Think of Thomas the Tank Engine. Insulin is the fat controller. Insulin is saying we are in fat storage mode because there is abundance of food.
How does the body know it's that time of year? Is it picking up on, I don't know, UV levels? Is it registering temperatures? The position of the sun in the sky? What?
No, it's purely picking up the abundance of glucose in the blood. It's that simple. If you're putting a lot of carbohydrate in, the blood glucose goes up. Insulin is sensing the amount of blood glucose. There's like a switch. We are in fat storage mode because there's an abundance of food now.
Well, and you're eating it because of just of the abundance. So it's an opportunistic thing, but it connects with everything else. Yeah,
it does. And you know, it's caveman's refrigerator. There's a lot of food around. Let's store it for the winter. That's what insulin is doing, and it's purely picking up the amount of glucose in the blood.
Okay.
But it's actually more complicated than that, because there's a whole lot of other hormones that interact with this. So there's cortisol, and we've spoken about cortisol before. It's the body's prednisone. It's the stress hormone. And so our modern lives are full of stress compared with that of our ancestors, and our cortisol levels are higher.
So we don't have to worry about being eaten now so much.
No, but it's the body interpret the signal is that we are in a stressful situation. Either we're in a war, we're in a famine, where there's a whole lot of saber-toothed tigers around, but whatever's happening, the body is saying store the excess energy as fat because we might need it very, very soon. So that's cortisol, and that's our modern lives being stressful and full of glucose. But it's even more complicated than that. There's leptin and ghrelin, and they're our fullness and our hunger hormones. They are interacting with insulin and cortisol as well. So we're getting these messages to eat more, and that's why we're constantly hungry. So can you see how the calorie model is dramatically oversimplifying something which is far, but equally it's not that complicated if you think of our caveman genetics and all these hormones are around storing fat because we're under stress or we've got an abundance of food. And then there's these other ones, GLP-1 and GIP. You would have heard a lot of discussion about these weight loss injections. The Ozempic, I think, is the one that's been discussed a lot. And what it's doing is it's interacting with this GLP-1 hormone. But we don't need those injections because if we eat whole unprocessed food, that stimulates GLP-1. It kind of drives me absolutely nutty, Paul, that we've got this really expensive injection and all we need to do is eat whole unprocessed food that's full of fiber. We will stimulate GLP-1 without having to have a weekly injection.
And weekly? Okay.
Yeah, some are weekly and some are daily. And the other important hormone here is called GIP. So if we eat it as processed food, we stimulate GIP, which causes us to gain weight. If we eat it as unprocessed food, we stimulate the GLP-1, the same one as the Ozempic does. I hope I'm saying that right. I don't prescribe them, Paul, because I don't need to, you know, but it's a big craze. Everyone's asking for the weight loss drug, and I'm going, just eat whole unprocessed food. You will stimulate GLP-1. So the point we're making here is that these hormones, although they're quite complicated, all that they're doing is responding to our modern lifestyles. So let's change our stress levels and let's change our eating patterns, and we don't have to worry about them. It's going to take care of itself.
Where does bariatric surgery fall into this? Because that is an option people take. Is that an option that's taken because there are no alternatives? Or does what you're talking about render this unnecessary as well?
You've asked a complex question, Paul, because we then have to come into the topic of food addiction. And it gets quite complex, but certainly the bariatric surgery does interact with all of these hormones, but it does add another layer of complexity on top.
Right. Okay. It's amazing, though, just again, what you were saying just before. So you, from your observation of your environment, whatever environment you're living in, is giving you certain thinking on what you're seeing, which is translating into a whole lot of processes down the line that will essentially prepare you for any issue.
Exactly. And
you don't even know it's happening.
we've talked so far about we have caveman genetics and we've created an environment that's stimulating fat storage. So how do we fix it? We can ignore all that, but in between all the complex hormones and the complex biochemistry, we can identify there's a problem, a mismatch between our genetics and our environment, and go straight to how do we fix it without having to understand all that complex bit in the middle. So what is the problem? The problem is our diet. Our diet is high in sugar, high in carbohydrate, and high in ultra-processed foods. So let's get them out of our diet, and we've solved the problem. So we are eating too much sugar. We are eating too many carbohydrates. So what do I mean by that? Bread, pasta, potatoes, rice, get those out and avoid the ultra-processed food. Foods that are wrapped in plastic and have ingredients that we don't have in our cupboard. That's the definition of ultra-processed food. That stimulates GIP and does not stimulate the GLP-1. So let's get rid of all of those foods and replace them with foods that were available to our caveman ancestors. So what that might that be? Things that have recently been growing, swimming, running, or flying is a really good definition. Yep. So things that have been growing. So those are vegetables, particularly the above ground vegetables, things that have been swimming. So our fish, amazingly healthful. Things that have been walking, so that's meat, basically, and things that have been flying.
Anything with legs, Glenn.
Yeah, chicken, you know, and if we were to eat like that, and also nuts and seeds, you know, if we were to eat like that, we are going to lower our insulin and we are going to stimulate our body to think it is in our fat burning mode. So what we're trying to do, if we lower the carbohydrates, we lower insulin, we flick the insulin switch into fat burning, because we have told the body that we're now in the harsh winter, there's not an abundance of carbohydrate anymore, and it's now time to burn the stored fat, to open the refrigerator door and to take the food out of the refrigerator. We have stored an extra 10 kilograms. Now is the time to take that food and to burn it as fuel. It's quite simple, really, isn't it? We change the hormones by lowering the amount of glucose in the blood, by lowering the amount of carbohydrate. And the big key here also is, if we eat dietary fat, if we eat fats like avocado and olive oil and fatty cuts of meat, we will burn that as fuel if insulin is low. We will burn it as fuel. We're not going to save it. Yeah. You know, we're not going to store. So think in simple terms, eating dietary fat is a fuel that you will burn. Eating carbohydrates is turning it into fat to store right for later. That's the key.
And if you're not hibernating for the winter, you're going to be storing excess, no doubt.
Exactly. So it's actually pretty simple, the solution. Avoid carbohydrates, especially the ultra-processed carbs, and eat fats and proteins if you want to lose weight. So eat fat to lose weight.
Going back to where we started, do you think there's any possibility of, I mean, I know you've just come out and basically said we're wrong on behalf of the entire medical establishment, but at some point, this, we have to get real, don't we, about this? And someone will have to say something. Can you see it happening? Because the resources aren't endless to go the other way, are they?
Well, we're in a really difficult situation, because we have the food industry, the ultra-processed food industry, that's making a lot of money from selling ultra-processed foods, which have some advantages. They have a long shelf life. They can be stored and they can be sold and they can be transported. So I understand why this has happened. There's a lot of money being made with very good marketing and advertising and lobbyists. It's very, very difficult for a government to come out and say, let's get rid of ultra-processed food, which they should, but I doubt that they're going to. This change is going to happen from the ground up. Yep. It's going to be people saying, we're not going to buy that food. And if it's not being sold, the supermarkets will stop stocking.
Yeah, because they only wanted to be able to sell what sells.
Exactly. You know, and that's the change that has to happen. It's a bottom-up change. We need individuals, families, and then communities to say, we don't want that food. You know, and imagine if a whole community went to the supermarket and said, oh, we don't need those soft drinks. We're not going to buy them.
If they stop selling.
How about you stop? Yeah. You don't stock them, you know, and that's what's going to happen, and that's what's got to happen for these changes to happen.
Do you think the folk in the ultra-processed part of the food industry consume that product themselves? It'd be interesting to know, wouldn't it?
I don't know the answer to that.
I know you don't, but you wonder.
I doubt it. I doubt it, because they're making a whole lot of money and they certainly have the means, the financial means, to afford these high quality foods that we're talking about, the vegetables, the meat, the fish and the chicken. I doubt that they consume them. They probably know, particularly at the very, very high levels of those companies, they will know the harm that's been done.
Wow. Anything more to say on this before we wind up this health hacks?
untold to say, but I think we've covered the basics.
Yeah.
Thank you, Paul.
Well, Glenn, I'm just going to wait for this ambulance to go past.
Okay. And we could also wait for the fantail that flew into the room to leave as well.
Okay.
Did you hear the chirping?
No, I didn't. No, Zoom's very good at AIing funny sounds out. Okay. Do you want to mention that?
No, that's fine. No.
Okay, so, all right, Glenn. Well, thanks for another very useful health hacks, and maybe, you know, one person at a time.
Yeah, and it's a really important topic. So many people are frustrated by their inability to lose weight. I hope just from this simple few minutes, people have now got the information that they need to make the changes to lose weight that they haven't been able to before.
If Reality Check Radio enriches your day and life, support us to keep bringing you the content, voices, perspectives, and dose of reality you won't get anywhere else. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.